April 20th, 2016, in Gainesville, Florida. Thank you. With great trepidation, right? Looking around, making sure nobody has come. Great care. Were you here the day the water spilled?
I was.
You were, yeah. Okay, so we're going to be finishing up Manushiksha verses 11 and 12. Just anybody remember what we did yesterday with 8, 9, 10, the verses about perfection?
That's the path.
But that was very good. We're done with the donkey ear now. We're finished. We're bathing in the ocean of love. We're done with that. But that was good. No, just yesterday. Verses 8, 9, and 10 on the path of perfection. I'm not going through the whole thing, just 8, 9, 10. Anybody remember?
Engaging in the service of Gandharvika.
The service of Gandharvika, yes. Krishna engaging us in the service of Srimati Radharani, Gandharvika, and what else?
And how to get rid of, Raghunath Das Goswami says, his inherent wickedness.
And getting rid of inherent wickedness by the...
there was taking shelter of Giri Govardhan.
Well, taking shelter of Gandharvika. Having... Giridhari put us in the service of Gandharvika.
Yeah, like that picture of Krishna taking.
Yes, isn't that a nice picture?
I really like it.
And then getting rid of our inherent wickedness through
the whole was
through mercy.
Through mercy. Okay.
Yeah. Let's just do 8 first. And what was the third thing in 8?
Very good.
Drinking nectar. This time drinking it, so it's now internal. That thick nectar there, yes. Good. It's one of the reasons it's nice to have the visuals, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt really bad in Alachua that like 90% of the people were just on the internet and couldn't see the visuals. Yeah. Okay, and then do you remember what text 9 was? So now, by the mercy of Krishna, our inherent wickedness is gone. We're filled with internal liquid nectar, and we're in under the shelter of the internal energy. And
now
text 9?
Now it's the ladies, right?
Well, the ladies, that was in 8. The ladies entered the heart. So then text 9, it starts to get more, we're getting more and more specific.
Learning how to serve, like Lalita.
Yes, very good. So meditating, Raghunath Das Goswami told us to meditate on whom?
The chief lady in the heart?
Well, very good. That was verse 7. Now we're on verse 9. Anyone can remember verse 9. So who are we meditating on?
Oh, like Nandini Yashoda or...
Well, that would be if you're in parental rust. But Raghunath Das Goswami is saying to meditate on 6. He gives 6 items for meditation. Should we go to the picture?
Yeah. The residence of the
office.
That's not it. It's more specific.
More specific, folks.
Wait, I want to remember it.
Who did he say to meditate on? Right, how did I get to this picture? That wasn't the picture that I wanted. I wanted to get to this one. There we go. Well, you see 5. I don't know if the 6th one is in this picture. You see 5 in here. Who specifically?
It was Radharani.
Lalita, Vishakha, Krishna, Radhakund, and Govardhan. And meditate. How do you meditate on Krishna? He said, Krishna as the Lord of Radha. Krishna as the moon of Vrindavan and the Lord of Radha. Radha as the
embodiment.
Well, we talked about how she's the embodiment of love, Yogi Shakya. Raghunath Das Goswami specifically says, and Bhakti Notaker says, meditate on Radha as the beloved of Krishna, then Vishakha as the what?
Spiritual master,
good. And Lalita as Radharani's friend. Radhakund and Govardhan, each of them as giving?
Darshan.
The darshan, yes, good. The sight and the love of the divine couple. And you talked about Nanda and Yashoda. So for people who are not in the mood of amorous love for Krishna in Radharani's group, their objects of meditation would be slightly different, with one notable exception. What's everybody going to meditate on? Actually, two notable exceptions. Krishna. And if you're a cowherd boy, you're not going to be meditating that much on Radha. You're meditating more on Subha or Trina.
The Dham?
Which part of the Dham specifically?
Vrindavan.
Which part of Vrindavan specifically? Govardhan. So Govardhan is all of the different moods. Everybody's going to be meditating on Govardhan. So, of course, everyone meditates on Radha Krishna, Lalita, and Vishakha. However, if you're in parental rust, you may be meditating mostly on Nanda, Yasoda, Rohini, Krishna, and Balaram, rather than Radha and Krishna. Does that make sense to everybody? Yes?
It's favorable.
Whatever's favorable for your mood. So Raghunath Das Goswami here is giving his mood, and he's also giving a template. So that was verse 9. Everybody's got now 8 and 9? Okay, good. And what about verse 10? What was verse 10 about? Anybody remember? Yes. Yes. Srimati Radharani as the supreme goddess. Yeah, so that's firmly under the control of the internal energy. Right? Okay. So now we're going on to text 11 and 12. Okay, everybody?
Samam Shirupena Smaradiva Sharada Girvitor Raja Sakshat Seva Lavana Vinaya Targana Yujo Jai Jaya Jnana Shavana Nati Pancham Ritamida Jaya Nitya Govardhana Manudinam Tvam Bhajamana.
Oh mind, you should every day drink the five nectars, worship, glories, meditation, listening to divine pastimes and offering obeisances, and worship Govardhan according to the rules. In this way, follow the instructions of Sri Rupa and obtain the direct service of Sri Sri Radha Gidipati, who are captivated by the god of amorous love in the company of their associates in Vraja. So we had in verse 8, you're drinking this nectar. It's just one nectar. And now, you know, your wickedness is gone. You're internally filled with this nectar, right? You're under the care of the internal potency. You're meditating on the devotees in your particular mood of service. And now you're getting your service. Now you're getting your eternal spiritual service in these five nectars. So this is the differentiation, the individualization of perfection. But again, as I keep reiterating in these seminars, do these five nectars apply to the beginner also? Of course. Of course. So these are the five nectars: worship, glories, meditation, listening to divine pastimes, offering obeisances. So we engage everybody in doing this. At the same time, at this point in Manashiksha, this is in one sense the last verse of Manashiksha, this is where you're engaging in these activities according to your individual proclivity in your spiritual body. So this verse is really operating on two levels at least, if not many more than that, simultaneously. Now, we have an interesting with this translation. This was one of the translations that we worked with our Sanskritists for a very long time over. Do these five nectars also apply to Govardhan or not? In some translations, they'll say worship Govardhan with these five nectars. So we illustrated it like that, though we didn't translate it like that. Because definitely he's saying, jana nitya govardhanam anudinam. Anudinam means day after day. So every day, one should worship Govardhan according to the nitya, according to the rules, according to the niti. According to the rules, and one should also do these panchamrita. So one could understand that one can do these five nectars in general and also worship Govardhan, and one could understand that we can do these five nectars specifically for Govardhan. And both are certainly ways of understanding Raghunath Das Goswami's intentions. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about how we should congregationally chant the holy name and reside in Vrindavan. So does this mean that we should reside in Vrindavan, we should empty out all of our temples, and all the devotees from all over the world should crowd into Vrindavan?
No.
No. Why not?
Too austere.
Too austere for Sita. Okay, she couldn't handle it. I probably couldn't handle it, especially in April, May, and June.
Because you can attain Vrindavan anywhere.
Yes. Yes, you can attain Vrindavan consciousness anywhere. What would happen if all of us went to Vrindavan?
We wouldn't fit.
We wouldn't fit. I mean, on a practical level, even the number of people now going to Vrindavan is severely straining the ecosystem there.
Also, if you could go to Vrindavan that easily, it would be too easy. If you could actually go to Vrindavan.
We don't want it to be too easy, right? You don't have to worry about it.
I would love if it was, but
it's not. Just by purchasing a ticket, it's not so easy.
No.
Right? So just moving your physical body.
It's too easy.
Right, my friend Shimati likes to say, when people used to travel by horse cart and ox cart, they mentally get there first and then physically. She said, today we physically get there and then mentally.
Yeah.
Right, you ever feel that your subtle body's still over the ocean after a few days after you land, you're not quite there yet. So Prabhupada says you cannot go to Vrindavan simply by purchasing a ticket. So we would definitely strain the whole ecosystem of the Vrindavan here. It's already happening. It's not so easy just to enter Vrindavan to buy a ticket to India. And we can find Vrindavan everywhere. And what else would happen if we all just went to Vrindavan? Yeah?
The preaching would stop.
Can you imagine that? You know, if all the devotees, as soon as we made devotees, we put them on an airplane and sent them to Vrindavan. Then how would we have any, how would we be part of Lord Chaitanya's movement to spread Krishna consciousness to every town and village? In fact, Srila Prabhupada left Vrindavan to spread Lord Chaitanya's movement. So we have these five nectars, offering prostrated obeisances, and we're showing each of these in relationship to Govardhan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, before the deity or any object or place that awakens our remembrance of the Lord. And meditating on the divine holy names, form, divine qualities, meditation. So there's a whole discussion we can have about meditation and the different stages of meditation. Should we do that? Should we have that discussion about the stages of meditation? Should we do that? Okay, if we do that, then I have to pull up another file that I wasn't ready to pull up. And that stays there. That's cool. Never quite know what you're... technology is going to do. Got me all nervous here. Okay. So just give me a minute to pull this up. Oh. Very nice. Maybe I should just put this in the seminar, huh? I'll do that next time.
Seminar in the
seminar. And how am I going to pull that up? I think what I'll have to do is actually close this. And I get that, and then I'll get this. Aha! But you probably can't read any of it.
You can put the Zoom on.
I can put the Zoom on. Okay.
Magnifying
glass. Does that help at all?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. It actually helps. When I turn this way, I can't see very much. Okay, so these are the five stages of meditation. Now, these are explained a little bit different ways in different places. Does anyone know where in Srila Prabhupada's books we find these five stages of meditation?
Nectar and Strata.
Good guess. Excellent. Which verse?
Eight.
Excellent. Very good. And Srila Prabhupada is quoting whom in that purport? First class. Give him a round of applause. That was really good. What? Does he get a prize, do you say?
Anyone's a prize.
Is anyone surprised? I thought you were asking to get a prize.
Well, you do, but.
You can get teased by us. And you're older than him, right?
Yeah.
So you can definitely tease him.
Well, I got it from you, so I'm allowed.
Poor guy. Okay, so these five stages of meditation, and I have a whole seminar on this, so we're not going to go into it in depth, are Shravana Das, constant hearing, hearing from the lips of a true spiritual preceptor about the goal and means to attain it, in a happy mood with a deep thirst. These descriptions are taken from a number of places. They're taken from NOI 8, as you already mentioned, from Jiva Dharma chapter 19 and 40, from Prema Bhakti Chandrika chapter 12, and from Harinam Chintamani, and then, of course, from Manashiksha 11, which is what we're studying right here. So then one goes into a deeper kind of meditation, Varna Dasha, which is called also acceptance, being attached to hearing. With every delight from the deepest recesses of one's heart, one welcomes surrendering to Sri Guru. There is a beginning form of realization of one's eternal identity with a general understanding of the Vraja personality one is following. Then Smaranavasta, partial and repeated remembrance of the names, qualities, and the pastimes of the Lord and one's identity. This is chanting Harinam with joy in one's heart, then gradually adding mamata, possessive attachment. Next, adding loving intimacy based on firm faith and confidence in the Lord. Then samadhi, but you'll notice there's another samadhi down there, don't you? See those two samadhis? So right now we're just going over the top row. Then samadhi or apanadasha. Smaranadasha, fully developed, realized understanding of the 11 aspects of one's original constitutional position. One has a firm conviction of pursuing the lila of Krishna and having entrance into the lila, one is completely absorbed in Krishna rasa. And sampati dash, clearly and perfectly understanding one's eternal relationship with Krishna. Radha and Krishna come personally, not just in the mind. One is living in the spiritual world and engaging the material body to help condition souls. So these are the five stages of meditation. And the third stage has five sub-categories. So the first subcategory is smarana, recollection interrupted, partial engagement of the mind, short intermittent recollection. Meditation is easily broken by wandering thoughts and external distractions. One is cultivating attachment for Krishna and eagerness for perfection. Then dharana, or absorption, which is uninterrupted, withdrawing the mind from all material objects and ordinarily engaging the mind on the Lord. One is purposely withdrawing the mind from other thoughts and thinking about a specific subject related to Krishna in general terms. Then jhana, which is the term Bhagavad Gita Swami uses in verse 11, concentrated, thinking specifically about all aspects, the name, forms, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord, applying the mind at length to contemplate particular forms, qualities and pastimes of Sri Krishna, then unrestricted, constant remembrance, expanded and constant, thinking of the forms of the Lord without interruption, just like the flow of nectar. An effortless flow, continuous dhyana, like the smooth flowing of nectar, then samadhi, constant manifestation of the names, forms, qualities and pastimes being the only object of meditation, absorbed in Krishna for an extended period, with nothing else remaining in the heart. And you might ask, what's the difference between these two kinds of samadhi? The kind of samadhi, can you see my cursor? This samadhi here is on the mental platform, and this samadhi here is fully on the spiritual platform. Prabhupada talks about this somewhat in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, where he talks about lifeless yoga and living yoga, where Lord Kapiladeva says you should use the mind as a hook to catch the Lord. And then the meditation using the mind, just like you light a fire in wood, and the fire eventually burns up the very wood that is supporting it. So we use the material mind to think about Krishna, and then that meditation dissolves the subtle body, and the actual reality manifests. One way you can think of these stages of meditation, how many of you here have made real, real honest-to-goodness burfi or seen it being made? Anybody here? real burfi, not powdered milk burfi. Okay, how we can get a little closer. Sweet rice, anybody who made sweet rice, real sweet rice? So the way you make real burfi, you take real honest to goodness milk, a rare commodity nowadays, but you take real milk and you put it on the stove and you turn on the burner. And then what do you do with it?
Stir it for 3 hours.
Do you stir for 3 hours immediately?
No, wait for it to boil.
Wait for it to boil. While you're waiting for it to boil, what are you doing?
Chanting Hare Krishna.
Chanting Hare Krishna. Look at that Vaishnava in the back of the room. What are you doing while you're waiting for the milk to boil?
Stirring.
No, you're not. Stirring occasionally.
Sure that it's not, yeah.
You're stirring it occasionally. What are you doing the rest of the time? Huh?
Making
other things. Doing something else. Okay, doing something else, and you come back to the milk, and you stir it, and you do something else, you come back to the milk, and stir it, right? All done that? You're not standing over the pot and stirring it at that point, are you? No. Maybe you're setting up the dal, you're cutting up the vegetables, you're doing something else. Okay, then the milk boils, and you have to stir it, right? And even then, you're stirring it constantly? No, you turn down the flame usually a little bit so it keeps boiling, and you stir it periodically. Then the milk starts to get what?
Thick.
It starts to get thick. But still, are you stirring it constantly? No. And when it gets really thick, then you're stirring it constantly. You get to a point that you're stirring it constantly, and then after a while, it starts to what?
Condense.
It starts to condense. It starts to really pull away from the sides of the pot. You start with like condensed milk. It becomes condensed milk. Then it starts to pull away from the side of the pot and become this solid mass in the bottom of the pot. So meditation is something like that. So we start off with just hearing about Krishna. We remember Krishna sometimes. You know, okay, I'm remembering that. But then we remember him more and more and more often. Then our remembrance of him becomes thicker and thicker. Then it becomes thicker and all the time. And then it gets thicker and all the time, and thicker and all the time, and thicker and all the time, until it's so totally condensed. Is that pretty clear? Going back to where we were. Aha! Thank you, computer. Okay, so here's the picture for one of the five nectars of meditation. And this is what's supposed to be happening when we're chanting. We're supposed to be going deeper and deeper into these stages of meditation. The many verses that Kalakantabu gave me to speak on tomorrow, I still have no idea how.
Six.
Only six verses. No, I already planned out the whole class, but the problem is all these long form. When are we having to read it, etc.? But there's one of those verses where Prabhupada said, it is not by the mechanical process of hearing and chanting, but only by the mercy of the Lord that we attain perfection. And the next verse is all about the benefits of hearing. Quite interesting. I quoted that verse whenever I would speak to the graduate students in the Southern Baptist ministry. You know, it's not by works, but by faith, and I really like that.
Which verse is it?
176, I think. 176 in the bottom. So our meditation is not mechanical. We are not going to go back to Godhead mechanically just by doing some mechanical ritual. We're going back to Godhead by deep meditation and love and tasting the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of pure devotees. Again, we're showing all of these at Govardhan Hill because the verse could be understood in that way, but these can be at any place. And we're showing bathing Govardhan with these five nectars. This is, of course, quite symbolic. So one should be engaging in these five nectars. Anybody remember what the five nectars are? Mm-hmm. Should we get back that other picture?
It was hearing, chanting, and remembering.
Should we get back
worshiping.
That
worshiping. I remember one of them was worshiping one of these.
Does this help?
Worship,
glorifying, meditating, hearing, and obeisances. Okay? These are the five nectars. And again, I love it that you can walk in the door and you can say, do these things, and you can also do these things at this level of advancement. So here we are in a, went too far. Here we are symbolically bathing Govardhan in these five, what are they in?
Worshipping,
glorifying,
meditating,
reciting,
hearing, and
oh,
thank you. Good. So we're bathing Govardhan in these five nectars, and he says, now again, it's subject to how you're going to translate the sutra. So it could be do these five nectars in general, and it could be do these five nectars in general for which personalities?
Govardhan,
or which personalities did we get, Mac, Tex, Nine?
Oh, you mean the like, those guys?
Those guys?
Yeah.
What did you call the generals?
Wait, do you mean like Bhishma?
Oh, no, those were back in Tex 7.
Bhishma, Radha, Lalita.
Excellent, thank you. And those guys, right? Radha, Krishna. I know we're informal here at Krishna House, but... Sita is fully on the platform of spontaneous love. She's lost all on reference. Hey, would you give the flowers to those guys over there? Oh, you mean Lalit and Vishaka? Yeah, those guys. Oh, that was sweet. That was sweet. Okay, so this could be the five nectars in relationship to Radha Krishna, Lalita, Vishaka, Radhakund, and Govardhan. And again, depending on. For the advanced devotee, when they awaken, it could mean Mother Yasoda, Nandamaraj, Subhashvatam, etc. And also, of course, Govardhan is there for everyone. So it certainly means for Govardhan. And one should also worship Govardhan. And we find this emphasis on Govardhan throughout the Manashiksha. We find an emphasis on devotees and the mercy of the devotees, and we find this emphasis on Govardhan. Now, Raghunath Das Goswami, of course, had a Govardhan Shila. As Govardhan Shila was a gift directly from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in our volume 1 of Manashiksha, we copied down the verses from the Chaitanya Charitamrita about how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu received this Govardhan Shila himself and a Gunja berry necklace. And he worshipped the Govardhan Shila. In fact, the indentation was from him just rubbing the Shila and crying over the Shila. And he gave the Govardhan Shila and the Gunja berries to Raghunath Das Goswami. And Raghunath Das Goswami said, I can understand by getting a stone from Govardhan, Shila literally means stone, by getting a stone from Govardhan, it meant that Lord Chaitanya was giving me residence at Govardhan, and by giving me the Gunja berries, it meant he was giving me the shelter of Radharani. By the way, I have not found anyone ever who gave a reasonable explanation of why the Gunja berries indicated that he was getting the shelter of Radharani. The closest explanation I've heard that makes any sense is that it was just simply a gift from Lord Chaitanya, who's Krishna in Radha's mood. But many times people feel that Gunja berries represent Srimati Radharani in worship, and I just don't know. I haven't been able to. I've looked and looked and looked. Do you know if it's something authoritative?
No.
That would be lovely. What?
Not authoritative.
Not authoritative, okay.
It's like almost like a trivia.
A trivia, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. They use the Gunja berry necklaces for virgin girls in Brazil. So maybe it has some association in India at that time for young girls. I really don't know. As I say, I've tried, I've asked a lot of people, done a lot of research. And if any of you find out, I'd be interested to know. But as I said, the most plausible explanation I heard was simply it was a gift from Lord Chaitanya. He took it in that way. Okay, so for those of us, and we took, of course, a part of this painting as our book cover, because we felt that it really just epitomized the mood of Manashiksha, getting this entrance into the Holy Land from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, for those of us who don't worship the Govardhan Shila, how can we worship Govardhan Anudina? How do we worship Govardhan every day? What would this mean for us?
It could mean Govardhan's past understanding versus the glorification of Govardhan.
Oh, look at that, Jai Vardhan. I'm singing some prayers to go around here. Very nice.
I'm offering oil.
Well, that's if we have a Govardhan Shiva that we're worshiping. most of us don't, and most of us probably shouldn't. So why Govardhan? Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there, Lord Krishna is always surrounded by his friends, as is Srimati Radharani. Always surrounded by her friends. As we go through this, I want you to think about what does it mean to worship Govardhan every day. So certainly singing Jai Radha Madhava. What else could it mean? Let's meditate a little bit on who Govardhan is. So of all the devotees, this Govardhan Hill is the best. Yes. And Srimati Radharani says that first, according to the Acharyas, she says this hill supplies Krishna and Balaram, along with their calves, cows, and cowherd friends, with all kinds of necessities, such as water for drinking, fragrant cool water from Govardhan waterfalls, which Krishna and Balaram drink and use to wash their feet and mouths, beverages such as honey, mango juice, and pilu juice, fragrant soft grass for feeding the transcendental herds, caves where Krishna, Balaram, and their friends play, sit, and lie down. The caves give pleasure when the weather is too hot or too cold or when it's raining. Govardhan has soft roots for eating. That didn't work very well. It was supposed to be this really beautiful sound. And it totally did not work. When I've had it on my speakers, it's like this. Somehow. Jewels for ornamenting the body, you have to take it out. Flat places for sitting. And being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant. Does anyone know where these deities are? No. Not in this hemisphere. New Mayapur, France. And Krishna and Balaram have four seasonal outfits. A winter outfit, this is their spring outfit, a summer outfit, and a fall outfit. And it really looks like Krishna and Balaram have walked through a spring forest here. And Govardhan, let's hope the music works all right for this next one. Govardhan Hill shows how to, oh, close your ears. Govardhan Hill shows how to render pure devotional service, so the devotees pray. Oh, Govardhan, please let me live near you. So any thoughts as to what it would mean now that we meditate a little on Govardhan and his mood and his service? What would it mean every day to worship Govardhan?
Supporting Krishna and his enjoying his daughter.
Supporting
Which,
Krishna.
Like Hare Krishna does not do that.
Well, look at that. Hare Krishna does that. Yes, Hare Krishna. Yes, what else?
To have spiritual shelter.
Oh, to have spiritual shelter. Very nice. What else? What is Govardhan doing?
Providing all the stuff.
Providing all the stuff for?
Krishna and Radha and his friends to have
offering
fun.
Offering food to Krishna.
And everyone.
Offering food to Krishna. For Krishna and Radha and his friends to have fun, yes. So serving Krishna, Radha, the cowherd boys, all the
necessities.
All the necessities for all of the
inhabitants of Vrindavan.
Inhabitants of Vrindavan, for all the devotees. How are we really worshiping Govardhan when we're serving all the devotees? And making sure they have food, that they have water, that they have a place to sit, that they have their clothes, and they have everything that they need for their service. This is Govardhan's mood. And of course, Govardhan is Krishna. Govardhan is Krishna. In a mood something like Lord Chaitanya, who's in the mood of Krishna as a devotee, but it's Krishna in a mood of being the servant of all the devotees. To the point that everybody is doing what on him?
Walking
on him. They're walking on him. So he's providing a place for them to walk, for them to sit down. This is Krishna in this amazing mood of the best devotee of himself, giving a place for all of his devotees to walk on him and sit on him and giving them everything that he needs. Krishna as the ultimate servant. So every day worship Govardhan is also in this mood of serving all the devotees and remembering Govardhan when we're doing that. So every day we should have some meditation on Govardhan. Anudina, every day. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary talks about that with these five nectars. Oh gosh, I don't know what's happening to my Kali Yuga brain. What are they again?
Worship, glorify.
Worship, glorify.
Meditate.
Hearing.
Obeisances.
All right. So, how are we going to do this? You know, we already were told to meditate on those guys. Who are those guys who are meditating on the end? No, that's another verse. Those are the girls. Oh, Krishna's a guy. Dovardhan's a guy. So it's guys and girls, right? Oh, boy, this is being recorded. I don't know what's going to happen to me. You know, our Krishna movement. So we are supposed to meditate on those highly elevated transcendental personalities of Radha Krishna, Lalita Vishaka, Radha Krishna, Govardhana. And well, does that mean that we can just approach them directly for service? How does that work? So Bhaktivinoda is telling us we're doing these five nectars of worship, right? Worship, glories, meditation, hearing, and obeisances. With the mood that we're already meditating on Radha Krishna, Lita Vishaka, Radha Krishna, Govardhana, or perhaps Lal Yasoda and Rohini and Krishna Balaramo, as our proclivity awakens. But he's saying you're not going to get immediately direct service. That doesn't happen. I met today when I was in Gainesville, I met one devotee I haven't seen for a long time. She and I were like best buddies 40 years ago. And she gives training and workshops in particular healing arts, and she also has apprentices who are training under her. So it's usually like that, right? First you get training before you can become fully certified yourself, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, you're a doctor and first you're an intern and then you're a resident and then you can go in and be a full doctor. Or, you know, you go in the kitchen and you get trained as an assistant in the kitchen and then you become a cook. So in a similar way, doing these five nectars of worship with meditation on Radha Krishna, Lita Vishaka, or whoever our meditation is going to be. So Bhaktivinoda says that in the stage of perfection, one will first attain service to the Lord from a distance. And then one gets trained by the assistants who gradually turn you over to the intimate associates of the Lord. And then from there, one engages directly in the service of the Lord. And this is our Yasya Prasada Bhagavata Prasada Yasya Prasada Bhagavati Gitodi principle, where Srila Prabhupada says, the mystery of the disciplic succession is, although the guru is a transparent vine media, the service is direct. So in one sense, we're doing direct service to Krishna from day one. In another sense, we are gradually getting trained by the spiritual masters, by the devotees, in order to render direct service. And again, this is true even in the world. You don't get a job and immediately you become the personal assistant of the head of the company. You have to first get some training. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes the point that those who are on this very high platform are still doing things like wearing tilak and the deities' garlands and drinking the charanamrita just as the beginners are doing.
Great meaning.
And this fact is indicative way back in verse 3, long, long ago, last week, when we talked about how Swarup Damodar had taught the spontaneous love to two people. Anybody remember who they were?
Vakreshwar Pandit.
Good. And Raghunathas Goswami. And Vakreshwar Pandit had been taught what? The what?
Exoteric.
The exoteric, or the outer path. And Raghunathas Goswami had taught the esoteric, or the inner path. And it's nice that I have all devotees here today. Like, I wouldn't have talked about this if I had guessed again today. So the outer and the inner path, and the outer path is mostly about behaviors. Yes? So the outer path is spontaneous love. It's, you know, you become like a recluse, and you spend hours a day just saying mantras and meditating. And the inner path, your externals don't change. So when you're in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and you wake up to your eternal position with Krishna, people aren't going to be able to tell by looking at you. Everybody's in the line to take the charanamrita. Everybody's putting on tilak. And you don't know. You know, this person's just a beginner and they still think that they're their body. And this person is fully absorbed in Vrindavan in their mind at the highest stages of meditation. And you can't tell the difference because they're both taking charanamrita water.
But for someone that's doing the external path, like, what change did you see in them?
The change, well, they're living completely differently. Their externals are completely different. Not completely, but their externals are very different.
But you could still have the same scenario where two people are doing the exoteric path and one of them is totally realized and one of them is not. They're still doing it.
Well, yes and no. Because the idea is to take up the exoteric path. You're supposed to be very qualified even to start it. Now, what's happened with the exoteric path, and one of the main reasons that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati stopped teaching the exoteric path, although he brought in some things from it, as did Srila Prabhupada, is that it was given by unscrupulous gurus to unqualified disciples. Yes. And the exoteric path doesn't work if you're not qualified. It doesn't work. In fact, it causes problems. It causes difficulty. Because you're not so much active in the world, your senses aren't so much engaged, and if you're not ready for that, you're likely to fall on your face. Also, it's giving you very specific meditations that may not be your actual identity.
Ouch.
So it's just like, you know, the person who's really a musician and their parents say you have to become a doctor, and they waste all their time in medical school, and it actually hinders their becoming a musician. Because during the time they could have been learning an instrument, and the time they could have been associating with other musicians, instead they wasted their time becoming a doctor. I mean, I have a friend who became a lawyer and afterwards said, I don't like being a lawyer, gave it up. So the exoteric path, what's happened is they'll just assign you, they'll just say, okay, this is your eternal identity. But if the person isn't qualified, then the guru isn't qualified, then you're spending all your time meditating on an identity that's not yours. And it makes it so much harder for your real identity to awaken. You're thinking, well, I'm supposed to be a doctor. Why do I have this urge to play the guitar? There must be something wrong with me. You know, when you repressed your guitar playing urges while you're in medical school, you follow? Yes? Parents do this to kids all the time? So this is, maybe not so much in America. So this is the kind of thing that happened on the exoteric path. So the exoteric path was supposed to be given to people who are already at a very, 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 very high level. Now what's cool about the internal path is even text 11 can be done by beginners. And what happens is the internal awakens on its own. It awakens on its own. And one goes through these processes of purification, getting rid of the prostitute and the tigress, right, and the robbers and the donkey urine and the dog-eating, disloyal, dancing lady. Right? And then one enters into this nectar in the heart and the worship of Gandharva internally. Now, if somebody is a very advanced devotee, they may notice symptoms of another advanced devotee. They may notice subtle symptoms. But externally, there's not going to be that much difference. Does that make sense? Yes? Yes?
Is there any way, like, I probably have no idea what I'm talking about, but is there any way to, like, take both, like, best of both worlds and, like, mush them together into this, like, or there's just no need for it and you can just follow the inner path? Question mark.
No need for it, you can just follow the inner path. Can you put them together? Interestingly enough, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary on Manushiksha often quotes lengthy prayers and mantras. And that's what the exoteric path is. It's chanting all these different mantras. Now, interestingly enough, Bhaktivinoda Thakur does not quote the same mantras that are used in the exoteric path. He quotes different ones. With the exoteric path, it's like you've got to chant this mantra and then have this specific meditation, then this mantra and this specific meditation in this order, in this way. It's very external. Could you, on the inner path, chant additional mantras? Of course. As a beginning devotee, you can chant additional mantras if you want. Yeah, you know, you can learn it. Nobody's preventing you. At Krishna House, we don't have a rule. You may not learn any additional prayers other than what we say in our regular programs. It's not allowed. Yeah, it's not like that. You can learn as many prayers as you want, as long as you get yourself done. You know, you can't say, sorry, I can't do my hours of stuff for Krishna Lutz because I'm meditating on my mantras, because I'm on the exoteric path to Prabhu. We'll say, sorry, not in Bhakti Siddhanta's line. You know, it's not our line. But certainly you could. Now, on the exoteric path, you had better be doing the internal stuff on the inner path. That better happen. But there's nothing in the writings of the exoteric path about that happening. You know, I'd say you'd have to have a lot of guidance from a spiritual master to help you with the inner stuff if you're just on the exoteric path. You're really dependent. And it's from the nature of the exoteric path and thinking that the exoteric path is the only path of spontaneous love that a lot of the misconceptions about spontaneous love have come. Okay, well, you've got to have a Raghunatha guru and he's got to give you this and you've got to have that and you've got to have that. And that's all true if you follow the line of Akeshwar Pandit. But it's not true if you're following the line of Raghunatha Goswami. So sure, you could combine something. And I know of another Gaudiya group which shall remain nameless, which definitely, which is also in the line of Bhakti Siddhanta, which definitely has adopted a lot more aspects of the exoteric path. A lot more than we have done this. And that is all I will say about that. Yes?
I wasn't here for the previous seminar classes, so what exactly does the exoteric path entail?
It's a system of meditations and mantras which take many hours, in addition to chanting 16 rounds, in addition to worshiping the deity, where you meditate first on Guru, then each member of the Panchatattva, then each of the six Goswamis, then each of the gopis in each place in Vrindavan on your eternal identity. It's a very detailed system of mantras and meditations and worship. It's called Gaura Govinda Archana Smanana Padati. It was written by a grand disciple of Akeshwar Pandit, although it was passed down orally before that. So it's what we would call in Judeo-Christian, primarily Christian, perhaps, not Judeo-Christian, but Christian and Buddhist tradition, perhaps, as the contemplative path. You wouldn't have time to do all of that and have a job. And you wouldn't have time to do all of that and preach. And you wouldn't have much time. You'd have, you know, an hour or two a day left over between your regular practice of Krishna consciousness and all of those practices. So it's a very reclusive, contemplative, meditative life. It's a changing the external behaviors. So it's saying that once you start awakening your spontaneous love for Krishna, your external behaviors change dramatically. And instead of being a preacher in the world, instead of having a job in the world, you spend your time just in these prayers and meditation. Whereas the inner path is you're still doing everything in the world. But inwardly, you're purifying yourself, you're getting rid, you're recognizing and removing these different obstacles represented metaphorically by a prostitute, a tigress, the six robbers with ropes around your neck, the bathing in the donkey urine, and the wild, disloyal woman dancing in the heart and eating a dog. So you're getting rid of these different blocks to love of God. And then you're entering into the spiritual world internally. But externally, I mean, just like Srila Prabhupada externally was preaching and traveling around the world and so on, but Prabhupada wasn't spending hours and hours a day in chanting different mantras and meditating. That wasn't what he did. You know, you did find Bhakti Siddhanta who spent several years just in chanting. But he did not establish a society where the members were doing that kind of prayer and meditation, for which he was criticized by those who follow the exoteric path. They said, oh, just see, Bhakti Siddhanta is just teaching external rules and regulations. He's not teaching spontaneous love for Krishna. That was the main criticism of Bhakti Siddhanta. And that's been a big criticism of Srila Prabhupada and ISKCON also. And one of the reasons that devotees urged me to publish this Manashiksha was to establish that there is an internal path. And the internal path is a much safer path. You can't cheat. I mean, you can say, well, I've gotten rid of all of my anarchist movement, but I mean, you can't actually cheat. Whereas the other, you could. You could just, you know, you could go on for a few years and not everybody could even cheat. I mean, obviously not everybody could spend hours a day just in saying prayers and trying to meditate, but does that make sense? Yes.
I remember years ago that one of our leaders was saying how the Sankirtan Yajna is an expression of the an external expression of the internal rasa, of making tasteful arrangements for bringing Radha and Krishna together. Or
indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
That's sort of a merging of the exoteric and internal paths. What do you think?
Not really. And we have this logo that we have in the book. This is the Gaudiya Math logo, which my granddaughter Padma Gopi, who stayed in Krishna Hospital, which she redid because the Gaudiya Math logos we had were all really poor quality. She put in a modern printing press also, and put the modern incense, modern printing press, she put the words in Roman. And here you can see how Bhaktisiddhanta envisioned the path of rules and regulations and the path of spontaneous bhakti. And he envisioned rules and regulations as being primarily connected with deity worship, and spontaneous bhakti as being primarily connected with the Bhagavatam, with publishing, with preaching. And in the middle he has Om Nam, the holy name, surrounded by the six opulences. And at the top, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, at the bottom, Guru Gaudiya. Gaudiya here means the son of the association of devotees. So with the holy name in the center, Lord Chaitanya, the Guru, the association of devotees, we are simultaneously engaging in the rules of deity worship, inviting, and by Bhagavatam and preaching and kirtan, we are hoping to both awaken our spontaneous love for Krishna and, once awakened, to demonstrate our spontaneous love for Krishna. So that's not exactly the exoteric path, because those on the exoteric path are generally not preaching. Generally not preaching. And although they're certainly engaged in something related to kirtan and bhagavatam, again, it's not exactly that. It's not exactly that. It tends to be very personal. It doesn't tend to be group, although they may meet with small, like-minded groups. But doesn't tend to be like this big, you know, hundreds of people, sankirtan kind of activity, but very small groups who are getting together again and chanting these mantras. And they're very concerned about chanting mantras in a very particular order and going, you know, from the guru to the panchatattva in this order to the manjaris in this order. And you'll even find that, you know, groups today who are more accepting of the exoteric path, that is what they do. You know, what we see some groups where they'll spend an hour or 2 hours as part of their programs having bhajans of some of these prayers in this order. And they're much more into being reclusive. So I would say the ways in which we bring in some of the exoteric path is obviously we do chant mantras to the different personalities, and we obviously are engaged in meditation, and we have no objection at all if somebody in the Hare Krishna movement wants to learn, like, If you want to take the mantras that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving in Manashiksha and read them. I mean, Shiva Ramar has published a little book, My Daily Prayers. I mean, it's about yay big. You know, it's probably between a fourth and a half an inch big. And, you know, those prayers he's saying every day are something like the exoteric. So, you know, we would have no objection if you're doing all your services and you were to do that. But that's not the main process that we're doing as a whole in our Hare Krishna movement. But really, the preaching that we're doing is very much in the mood of Srimati Radharani, which is bringing everybody. So we're entering into this Vrindavan mood through our preaching and through our kirtan. But it's not quite the same. It's not quite this solitary. And we're going through these stages of meditation, not by withdrawing from the world and sitting in a little house at Radhapanda. But we're going through these stages, we should be going through these stages of meditation in our japa and in our kirtan, and through everything that we do. Everything is meant, we were talking about yesterday, becoming a personal tirtha. Everything that we do is meant to bring us into these deeper stages of meditation. As Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita 12.2, that even when going to the market to purchase something for the deities, that one should be in
meditation.
Samadhi. and one should be in samadhi. So how are you in samadhi when you're going to the market? You know, are you going to be in the kind of samadhi where you have Pratyahara first and you can't see the oncoming cars as you're driving? You know, is it that kind of samadhi? But we're trying to get in the samadhi of love. So the samadhi of love, all of us know, we've all loved someone in our life, yes? Everybody here has loved somebody, or maybe something, I don't know, maybe you've loved your car. So we've all loved someone. And that love for someone or something or some activity, perhaps we loved playing computer games, I don't know. Well, you know, we've all been very attached to someone, something, or some activity that has absorbed us, yes? Where time and space goes away, where you think about that person or that thing or that activity while you're doing other things. Isn't that correct? Everybody's had this experience with something. I mean, maybe it was your new iPhone, I don't know, you know, if you've never had a romantic love for somebody or, you know, most of the time we think of this in terms of romantic love. But also happens, you know, those of you who are parents, it happens with a new baby. When you have that new baby, you were mentioning that when you're talking about abortion, the symptoms of Kali, how when the baby's born, there's just this incredible, right? Incredible feeling of love from the parents. And at least when the baby's little, you're absorbed. You're just absorbed. You know, that you put the child down in another room and it's hard for you to concentrate on anything because you're thinking, is my baby okay? You know, you're waking up at night and is he breathing, you know? So it's natural for us to go into a samadhi out of love, and that kind of samadhi is much more valuable than the mechanical samadhi of dhyana yoga. So it's that kind of samadhi we want to enter into, and that sort of samadhi can be entered into while we're out shopping for Krishna, while we're cooking tomato sauce for Krishna, while we're washing the devotee's clothes. You know, if you can do that for your boyfriend or girlfriend in this world, why can't you do it for God? And you can do it for your boyfriend or girlfriend as well, right? Those of us who've been in love. You can. You know, you're doing the laundry and all you're thinking is, oh, when is he going to call? Oh, I think he's supposed to call now. I wonder if I'll get the load done on time for him to call. I may miss my phone. Did I leave him in the other room? Maybe if he calls, I won't hear the... Right? Isn't it? So this is how Yuvati Namitayani, Yudham Chayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayutayut Let my mind be always attached to you. So that is the samadhi that we are trying to attain. And that is an inner path of samadhi, that where we get that samadhi more and more and more as we cleanse the heart of all these things. Okay, let's get to our benedictory verse, which is like the cherry on the top. Really, in one sense, Mana Shiksha is finished in 11 verses. Mana Shiksha Dalika Dasaka Vara Meta Madurana. Oh, I got that wrong. Gira Gaya Dukshai Samahi Gata Sarva Jagatiya Sayuta Shirupa Nukahi Habavan Gokulapane Janorara Krishna Tulava Janaratnam Sarvate. Becoming a follower of Sri Rupa and his companions, one who with a sweet voice loudly recites these 11 supreme verses which give instructions to the mind and strives to understand all of their meanings completely, obtains the incomparable jewel of worshiping Sri Sri Radha Krishna in the forest of Gokula. Yay! So this also, we struggle with the translation. Do you have to recite these verses in Gokula and you attain Radha Krishna, or you recite the verses and you attain Radha Krishna in Gokula? So we favor this translation, although either one of them could be supported. So this is a painting of the 12th verse of Mana Shiksha in Devanagari characters, written on a leaf book, which was the kind of books they wrote at the time. And we have these jewels, the jewel of the love of Raja. Krishna likes to wear earrings like aquatics, dolphins, and sharks, or makaras. Makara is previously a Vedic sign for Capricorn. It's what Ganga rides on. The demigoddess Ganga rides on a makara as the stupid. It's a carrier of Cupid, the carrier of Ganga. So it's like makara earrings, or dolphins, or sharks. So following Sri Rupa, Rupa heard Rupa Goswami got the instructions from Lord Chaitanya. Don't make up your own process. Don't make up your own process. I have extensive conversations with one devotee who's always being inclined to make up his own process. Don't make up your own process. If you want to attain Krishna, you have to attain Krishna the way he says to attain him, right? If I want to meet you, I have to meet you how and when you want me to meet you. I can't just make it up. Like one devotee who's a counselor was telling me the other day, yeah, people will call me at 10 o'clock at night and not say, were you sleeping? Just say, oh, I had to call you, my husband and I just had a fight and I need your guidance. If you want to attain Krishna, you have Krishna's telling you, this is how to attain me. You can't make it up. You can get there gradually, right? As Prabhupada says in the purport to 331, even if you can't follow everything now, if you just want to and you don't resent the principle, you'll eventually attain perfection. So you can say, right now, I just can't chant 16 rounds, too hard. All right, but am I trying? Do I accept the principle? Then eventually I'll get there. You know, where I just can't give up my coffee or my marijuana or whatever it is you can't give up. You know, all right, but do you are at least trying and you accept the principle? When we resent the principle, we say, oh, you know, you should be able to smoke marijuana and attain love of God. You should be able to have 10 boyfriends and 10 girlfriends and still attain love of God. It doesn't matter. And just one name in prema should be enough. Why should you have to chant 16 rounds? So then Krishna's going to say, well, it doesn't work. It's like if you go to a university and you say, well, you should just give me a diploma, although I haven't attended any classes. I mean, there could be alternate means, but you still have to satisfy the authorities, yes? So through Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami has given us, especially which book of guidance?
Nectar of Instruction.
Nectar of Instruction and?
Devotion.
Nectar of Devotion. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So the Nectar of Instruction, Nectar of Devotion. These are the guidebooks. If we don't follow Sri Rupa, there's no question. No, I can't make up how to love you. I can't. I gotta love you the way you want to be loved. Otherwise, it's not love, folks. Right? I think you were giving the example of milk and water, right? That the guru says, please give me a cup of water. Oh, milk is so much better, but I don't want milk. I mean, I had a situation once where this person who was telling me how devoted she was to me and how I was everything to her, and, you know. And so we were in India and I was ill. And I said, I just want like rice, yogurt, and bananas. I don't want anything else. So she brings me pakoras. And I said, I can't eat this. I'm sick. She said, well, I couldn't bear to watch you eating just rice and yogurt and bananas. I said, I'm not eating so you can bear it or not bear it. No. I'm not eating to make you happy like that. So that, and it was kind of, the real problem was that on the one hand she was saying, oh, I'm so devoted to you. You're everything. But you have to eat these pakoras for me. And it just didn't fit. You understand? It didn't go together. So if we want to say, I love Krishna, I want to love Krishna, I want to enter Vrindavan, then we follow his program. And we follow his program. Then you could say, well, I can't do everything today. I can't flip. That's okay. But accept at least that that's the principle. At least accept that I should be doing it, that I'm trying to do it, that there's nothing wrong with doing it. The problem comes when we criticize and say, oh, those devotees who get up early in the morning, they're just a bunch of fanatics. And, you know, so if you start criticizing the principle, then you're in trouble. Does that make sense to everybody? You know, one of the things I was really trained in the beginning of this kind is stay in the boat. Don't jump out of the boat. So Rupa Goswami, having received instructions from Lord Chaitanya, he wrote these instructions. And also we're supposed to have guru, right? Or gurus, we're supposed to have guides that can work with us individually. Because it's not just even what's best, but what's best for me now. You can say, Rupa Goswami said, go live at Radhakund. I'm going, I got my ticket. But you know, Rupa Goswami didn't tell me, didn't say, Armila, go live at Radhakund now in April of 2016. As we said, if we all left and went to Vrindavan, where would the preaching movement be? How would Prabhupada be pleased with that? So we have the instructions of Rupa Goswami, and we have, it says, Sri Rupa along with his followers, and the devotees who instruct us, you know, okay, sannyasa is the best ashram, but maybe not for you now. Maybe not for you now at 25. Maybe Radhakund is the best place, but maybe not for you, and maybe not for you now. So to follow Sri Rupa along with his followers, and here we have, of course, Raghunath Das Goswami himself writing Mana Shiksha on the bay of Radhakund, and attaining the jewel of Radhakrishna, a worship in Gokula. So either do this in Vraja, or by doing this, go to Vraja. And Bhaktivinoda Thakura has many, many verses in this commentary glorifying Vrindavan. How wonderful is Vrindavan, how wonderful is Mathura. And he talks about how Radharani has a pride about Vrindavan. There's a spiritual pride, and her pride is, Vrindavan is mine. Radharani has this pride, Vrindavan is mine.
So,
yes, so this ends our brief meditation on the Mana Shiksha of Raghunath Das Goswami, which we would not even have known about, been able to enter into, or anything without His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Prabhupada. And sometimes I meet devotees who say, oh, I understand Prabhupada through the predecessor acharyas, and I always wonder at people who say things like that, because most people I've met didn't even know there were any such things as predecessor acharyas, and didn't even know the word acharyas without Srila Prabhupada. So my suggestion to all of you is understand things through Srila Prabhupada. Raghunath Das Goswami, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Rupa Goswami, go through Srila Prabhupada. If you do that, first of all, you'll always be safe. You'll know that I am on the shining path. I'm not getting diverted from the shining path. Why risk being unsafe? I don't get it. What is the point of risking being unsafe? And Srila Prabhupada has given us everything.
Isn't that ascending? We're supposed to go ascending.
Yes.
Otherwise, if you do the opposite.
If you jump over, it's not very polite. It's not as sweet either, no. And you're not. And then really the higher authorities will say, who are you? Who are you? Where's your ticket? Where's your ticket? Who are you? Where did you come from? I mean, obviously there's Kripa City. There's just mercy, you know. One should not expect. One should go through the proper authorities. Yes?
When you mentioned Kripa City, and Prabhupada gave a song proper to Gauranga Gira Dutipada.
Uh-huh.
And he talked about Kripa City. And so it doesn't, he said Kripa City means that because one has a really sincere service attitude, they get a downpour of Kripa. It's not just like completely random mercy.
Right.
It's that because the person has, even if they didn't do their sadhana, their spiritual practices completely, but they at least have like a really sincere service attitude, and then there's that intense downpour of mercy. But it's not just like for no reason. Like they at least have that sincere
service. Or it could
service.
Be something from another life. I mean, I always like this story when some devotees were preaching behind the Iron Curtain in the former communist countries, and they were in disguise, you know, and undercover. So at one point there was this big traffic jam. I can't remember what country this was in. It was one of like the Soviet satellites. There was this big traffic jam, and they went up and saw that there was a car accident. And this one man was lying on the road, and when some devotee who spoke the local language inquired, they said, oh, this is the second in command of the army here, you know, that works directly under the Russian general. And so one of the devotees said, oh, we have some kind of, this was way before mobile phones, but they said, we have some kind of a communication device we could call for help. And so the assistants told the general who was lying on the road from the accident, they said, oh, these people are going to try to get some help for you. So the general looks up at one of the devotees who had a different name, and he said, what is your name? And this devotee, this wasn't his name, but he said, my name is, what do you think?
Krishna.
Krishna.
Yeah, Lord Chaitanya.
He said, my name is Krishna. And the general said, Krishna, Krishna, he died.
Oh, wow.
So how sinful must this person have been, you know? It's kind of hard to even imagine. Why? Why is this person second in command in the communist army in this country where they're oppressing people? Why is he getting to see devotees and say Krishna as he leaves his body? Who knows? Who can see what was behind that and what was the story? So sometimes there's this just mercy on somebody that from our limited perspective in this life doesn't seem to have any cause whatsoever. We can't attribute any cause to it. Any other thoughts on anything on Mahakshatriya? Yes?
You were mentioning a lot how, like, it's not linear, so, like, someone could be advancing in one way and then not advance in another way.
Yes, like, happens very frequently.
Yeah, or a beginner could be, like, you know, sometimes awakening, like, kind of be in some of these stages, but then... So yeah. Just for the...
By the way, the evidence for that is from Madhurya Kadambini of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, where he talks about Nishtha, and he says that one attains steadiness in body, mind, and words. And he says, generally, people are first steady in body, then in speech, and then in mind. So that tells you right there that someone could be steady in body but not in mind. He says, but sometimes it goes in another order. So one person may be steady in mind but not in speech and in body, or steady in speech but not in mind and in body. So, and we see practically in our lives with devotees that we have some people who really respect devotees, but they don't respect prasadam. And some people who really respect prasadam don't respect devotees. And some people who are really, really clean. You know, we were reading that quote, Prabhupada said, cleanliness is next to godliness. They're really, really clean. But, you know, they're sloppy with their japa. Or they're really careful with their japa, but they're not so clean. And we see, you know, or some people who just, they don't study the shastras. Some people really study the shastras. But they're bad with it. So we see that in our own lives. Don't we see this?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think for all of us, are there some parts of Krishna consciousness that are just so easy we don't even have to think about them?
Yeah.
Just some things that are just, as soon as we take up Krishna consciousness, well, I can do that. Yeah. And it's nothing. We don't even think that we're doing it. And then there's other things that just seem impossible. And years go by and it's still impossible. We're just like, how does anybody else do that? And then we have other things that are kind of in the middle, that we work on it for a while, and it's some struggle, but we attain it. And so this is our, and it's different for different people. So what for me is just so easy peasy that I did it from day one. I might have done it before day one even. I might have never had a problem since birth with it. And for someone else, it's their biggest issue. And that can be reversed. That for someone else, something. So we can look at them and, well, why are you having a problem with that? That's easy for me. No, so yeah.
That's not my question.
Okay, sorry.
My question was, I wanted to just like apply that for donkey urine verse, because you're saying how like these people, you know, like they're getting joy, like, you know, I'm so renounced, I'm so spiritual, but they are. Like, they actually are.
They actually are.
So like, but could someone that's still, you know, in a couple verses behind dealing with like lust and anger and committing sins, but then also, you know, be in the donkey urine, like...
Well, of course. If you're at the lower level, you're also probably absorbed in the more subtle problems.
Okay, so that's just like that problem just is more
subtle.
Yeah, and also it's harder to get rid of.
Yes.
Than the lust.
Raghunathdasa Swami is giving us a progression of subtlety and difficulty with eradicating.
Because that's the pride. That's like the hardest thing.
Yeah, well, the hardest thing is the dancing woman in the heart with the dead dog. The pride that I'm a saint.
See,
and I'm a devotee and I'm a spiritual person.
So you have that when you're still battling the other stuff, but it's like first you need to, you know,
you don't
get
even
out
see
of
it.
Madness, get out of lust.
You generally don't even see it.
Yeah.
You generally aren't even aware of it.
Because there's like a higher, okay.
So, you know, most people aren't even aware of how they reveal themselves through their speech. They're not even conscious of it.
Yeah. Very true.
And then generally you first become conscious of that and fix that, and then you start being aware of how your actions are really not in line with what you're saying. They don't really behave properly. And then you start being aware that, well, now I'm behaving properly, but there's something wrong with my motives for what I'm doing. And then when you fix that and you really, your motives are good, then you can become aware, okay, my motives are good, but I want praise for my good motives. I want praise for my purity. And usually you can't even become aware of those until you conquer the more gross things. But yes, you can certainly have people who have awareness of some things at a higher level.
But then they're still like angry sometimes.
Yes, exactly. So you definitely will have people who there's certain parts of the donkey urine that just don't apply to them. They just don't do them. Even though they're still working on the speech thing. You know, there may be some person who never preached for the purpose of attracting the opposite sex or purpose of acquiring wealth, even though they talk about nonsense. So that could certainly be true, because look, some of these things we've done in other lifetimes. And we've already taken care of them, and we also demonstrate our material proclivity in different ways. You know, it's as I said, my attachments and your attachments are going to be different. So that's also quite true. But if you think about it, it's very hard for people to see the root if they haven't taken care of the other stuff first.
Like, you're not going to think of, like, spiritual life if you're, like, don't have enough water to drink.
Something like that. Yeah, if you're talking about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, something like that.
Yeah.
Although that's not absolute.
But it's
absolute.
Like a spiritual hierarchy. This is like a
yes, but it's not absolute. It's not absolutely true.
But neither is that hierarchy.
Neither is that hierarchy, yes. And sorry, my apologies for those of you who have no idea what we're talking about with that. Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and I don't have time to explain it. Anybody else have some other question? You have to study psychology. Yes.
You can Google it now.
Maslow's hierarchy. There you go. Yes.
It seems all the problems are based on lacking of humility.
Definitely. All the problems are based on the lack of humility. Absolutely, definitely, for sure.
I was thinking that I wanted to know, like, the humility is born from the mode of goodness. And it's like, yes. Why is Krishna pleased with that if he is farther from the mode of goodness?
Why is Krishna, if humility is born from the mode of goodness, why is Krishna pleased with it if Krishna is beyond the mode of goodness?
Yeah.
Very good question. The humility we're talking about is ultimately coming from love, not from sattva-guna. The ultimate humility we're talking about, the humility you finally achieve in verse 7. And verse 8 is really born from love. Let's think about a human relationship, and I think we'll end here. So let's say you have just an ordinary human relationship, a husband and wife, okay? So let's say the man comes home, let's do a real stereotypical gender role-based 1950s thing. Don't kill me, okay? So. And the man comes home from work and he just expects his wife to have dinner ready on the table. Why? Because he deserves it, because he's the husband. And the woman expects the man to take out the garbage and mow the lawn and earn the money because she deserves it. She's the wife, he's the husband, that's his job. So each of them have a kind of pride. Because I am the husband, I deserve to come home to a clean house and a freshly cooked hot meal and my wife all dressed up wearing perfume and taking my shoes off and telling me how much she loves me. And the woman's thinking, because I'm the wife and this is my husband, therefore I deserve for my husband to come home with money and for him to repair the leaky faucet and mow the lawn and etc. Now what happens when you think you deserve something?
Expectation brings suffering.
Get mad if you don't get it.
You get very mad if you don't get it. And when you do get it, how do you feel?
Well, it's like, you don't even, it's just like, this is how it should be. You wouldn't even feel that great. It's just,
you don't feel that great at all. So I give an example all the time. So let's say you get $20, okay? At $20, you go to the local store. What's the local store?
Mother Earth.
Mother Earth. Okay, go to Mother Earth. And you spend $20, and you buy something, and you find out later you could have gotten it for $5 online. How do you feel? How do you feel?
Cheated.
Feel cheated? How do you feel? Do you feel happy?
No. I feel tough.
Suppose you spend $20, you go to Mother Earth, and you buy something that's really worth $20. How do you feel?
Nothing.
Nothing. take half of $20, go to Mother Earth, you buy something, you find out it's worth $100, how do you feel?
Ah.
Our feeling of happiness is in direct inverse proportion to our feeling of deservedness. The more I feel I deserve something, the less I enjoy it. Always. If I get less than what I think I deserve, I get angry and upset. If I get what I think I deserve, it doesn't mean anything to me. I don't even notice it. And I only become happy when I'm getting something beyond what I deserve. You know when I realized this? I realized this on my 45th birthday, when the devotees threw a genuine surprise party for me that I didn't expect at all. And the whole community had a big party for me in North Carolina. I didn't expect it. I didn't think I deserved it. It was completely off my radar. And I realized that the reason that I appreciated it so much is that I didn't expect it and didn't think I deserved it. Whereas another time, I'd been flying all over the world, and I came to visit my kids on my birthday. I got there at 7 o'clock at night, and no one even said happy birthday to me, and I was upset. My own kids, I didn't remember my birthday. They came to say happy birthday to me. Humility and love have to go together. Without humility, there's no love. If you have absolute humility, then you appreciate and you feel gratitude for everything that someone is doing for you. Mode of goodness humility is a little different. Mode of goodness humility is, I enjoy being humble. Makes me feel balanced. Makes me feel in harmony with the universe. Because, I'm really small. I'm an insignificant speck in the universe. And when I'm humble, then I feel grateful and I'm being authentic to myself. And that way I can actually enjoy this world. Because those who aren't humble, they're not grateful and they're not authentic. And so they can't really enjoy the world. And I can, because I'm really absorbed in my insignificance. That's sattva-guna humility. It's still about me. And it's still about my trying to enjoy the world. Whereas in mode of passion, you're like, well, I'll put on a show of humility so people will praise me. But really, I'm the best. I'm the greatest.
Yes.
I'm conquering the world. And mode of ignorance is, I am the baddest. Nobody's as bad as me. Mode of passion is, I am the most pious. And mode of goodness is, I am the most balanced. I'm the most in harmony. I'm the most in equilibrium. I have peace within. That doesn't particularly attract Krishna. It's a lot better than passion ignorance. But it's still self-centered. My dear, I don't care if you went to work today or not. I don't care if you mowed the lawn or not, because I'm equal balanced with it. It's a little different. It's a little different from, I really don't deserve anything. Wow, you mowed the lawn? Oh, I'm so fortunate. My husband mowed the lawn? So the ultimate humility we want to get is the humility of love. We may not be able to do that on day one, but that's what we're aiming for. On day one, maybe we just fake the whole thing. On day one, maybe it's just, oh, I'm so fallen, Prabhu. Actually, I'm really great. I'm so fallen, I don't know anything. I really know everything. I'm so smart. I'm so better than all of you. And I'm even a lot more humble. Oh, Prabhu, I'm just so much more than you. Actually, I'm also in love with goodness. I'm really transcendental, and I think tomorrow I'm going to be realizing I'm not. So in the beginning, it may just be totally phony. But even totally phony humility is good, because it establishes that you accept the principle. It's something. At least you accept the idea that humility is valuable. So that's something. It's not nothing. Yes?
What is the transcendental example to all that you just said about humility and humility? What would be the example in Krishna,
Lagoon? In Shuddha Sattva. Humility and Shudita.
He gave the example the other day, Sagarbhuma Bhattacharya. He was the greatest scholar in Jagannath Puri. He was the advisor to the king. He was a pretty high up there person in Jagannath Puri. He was the spiritual advisor, the guru to the king. He was higher as a Brahmana than the king. And he said to Lord Chaitanya that you have delivered the whole world, big deal, but that you have delivered me, that's amazing. He said, you have turned a crow into Gurudev. That's transcendental humility. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, why do they say I love Krishna? I don't have any love for Krishna. He said, if I have any love for Krishna, how could I live in separation from Krishna? I must not love him. Been unable to maintain my life away from him. That's transcendental. Yeah. Did that kind of hurt your head? Sorry. You asked for a transcendental example.
Thank you.
Sorry. Stay what you asked for.
Okay, let's say as a mother, okay, my example, like you learn to love your kids and not be with them. You know what I mean? It's like you love,
yes.
You understand that the relationship is heart to heart, it doesn't have to be, it's always there. That understanding that it's always there, but it's eternal.
Lord Chaitanya is not saying everyone who loves Krishna should drop dead. That's not what he's saying. But he had this mood of humility. Yeah, this mood of humility that I am not a great devotee. The mood that whatever I have is by the mercy of Guru. And I really like another example, and this is a very heavy example, and then I really do have to end at 8 o'clock. Is Krishna Das Kaviraj. Now, often you hear devotees give half the example and not the other half. So I urge you, if you read this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, to please read the whole thing. Yes, you will do that? Otherwise, I'm not going to tell you. If you don't read the whole thing, then I'm not even going to bring up the example, because it'll just be depressing. So you have to read the whole thing, because if you read the whole thing, then it's ecstatic. And if you read half of it, it's depressing. He says, if you say my name, you will become sinful. I am lower than a worm in a stool, and I am more sinful than Jaghai and Madai. But I have received the mercy of Lord Nityananda. I am engaged in the service of Radha Madana Mohan. I am entering into Vrindavan. That's transcendental humility. I am disgusting. I am fallen. But I am wonderful. I am a crow turned into Garuda. I am serving the Lord. How amazing. I didn't have a penny. I didn't have a penny, and they gave me everything in the store. And we will have to end here. Thank you very much. If you